Welcome to the Fan Pregame, brought to you by Betano. The game starts now. Oilers forward Justin Cuthbert, almost 24 hours away from what we're anticipating to be maybe better than Saturday night, last night. If it can make it better, they will find a way.
Yeah, difficult to top. I know one way in which it would be better, and I think that would
specific
be Canadian,
result.
A Canadian victory would definitely enhance the viewing experience, I think, for us. But I think with the war of the words and everything that's going into tomorrow night, I think it's got the potential to do just that.
We're going to spend an hour here. We're going to chat with Brian Gionta at 6:30, Stanley Cup champ, former two-time USA Olympian, and obviously captain of the Habs. We'll go through what this means on the American side a little bit, and we're in the red, white, and blue. But I believe we might have Ron McLean's inaugural FaceTime. Let's see. Ron, how's it going?
Well, it's not inaugural, but it's close to inaugural. I feel like I'm on the International Space Station. How are you?
We're good. Thanks for making it work. We appreciate it. We know it's been a crazy busy week and a half. Is everyone healthy on the staff, at least? You guys quarantining away from all the ill players? Like, is everything
it's
good?
A good reaction.
We had a little reception last night, Eilish, and I said to Ed Hall, one of our senior folks, I said, you know, these are super spreader events, but he stayed away. There's a few of the crew have been banged up. As you know, it's going all through the NHL teams. And tonight's our final crew meal. I thought about opening night in Montreal. Elliot Friedman forced us to go to Crescent Street and a cigar bar called Stogie's. And honest to God, you should have seen us. There were seven of us sitting in a booth for five with cigars. So it's amazing any of us live to tell any of these tales. But I'll go see Elliot's organize the dinner tonight. And we've had, as you can imagine, a lovely time together. And I think for the panel to be on the road in the energy of these buildings and to experience the hockey, which is off the charts. It's been a very nice 2 weeks.
I was going to say, I don't know if you've seen Designated Survivor or know about that one.
That's right.
Like, you got to have one person just in case of emergency. I think you should be the designated survivor, Ron. But you won't need that. You're all going to be great.
good to know who's in charge of the party planning, that being Elliot Friedman. We can talk about that with him a little bit later. You know, I guess a bit of a gamble to go out first night and to a cigar bar. But the team that might be most on the limp would be the United States right now among those remaining. I just heard that it was a bit of a different tone at practice today. You were at practice, I gather. Was it a different feel between the U.S. and Canada? There was a lot of stops and starts with the U.S. a little bit in terms of personnel. But, like, how would you describe the difference between these two teams 24 hours ahead of the big game?
You know, Mark Messier was watching Canada. He said, I hope they save a little bit for the game tomorrow night, because they were flying. And it was really clear, John Cooper, this is his team. He was the only guy at the one and only whiteboard, whereas the Americans had three whiteboards and two drill sheets. And they had David Quinn did some drills. John Hines did some drills. Mike Sullivan did some drills. And each time they'd gather, and it was almost like they were a little bit confused as they would go through these drills. And part of it, as you say, I mean, only Brady Tkachuk missed the practice, so they're missing McAvoy and Brady Tkachuk. But it was just kind of a herky-jerky American practice with all different voices, committee chipping in versus the John Cooper-led Team Canada practice, which was crazy. I mean, MacKinnon and Crosby led the team onto the goalies were out first. But then the Crosby, MacKinnon, the two blue nosers who've been such leaders for Canada at this event, they came on the ice first. And the one difference that you noticed in the practices, Mike Sullivan kept demanding more speed. He kept calling for speed. And this, as I say, was partly because they were struggling to get the drills. But in the case of Canada, it wasn't a speed issue. It was move it. John Cooper kept yelling, move it. And he wanted the puck to be the pace. So but Canada looked, you know, what can you tell on an off day practice, but looked sensational.
I'm so curious about all the off ice, I guess, not drama, but the interviews. Like, the players have been really leaning into giving everybody everything. And we don't really see that candid NHL player as much as we have, like, Hagel and Tkachuk, and they're going back and forth in the interviews. I just wonder for you, like, consuming this and seeing maybe the growth of the personalities over the last week and a half, they seem to be teeing this up for us, giving us the content we need, giving you the content you need as we get ready for tomorrow night.
It's a good point, Eilish, because in 72, when the Soviets arrived in Canada on an Aeroflot plane and they came off and they were all, like, from Madame Tussauds Wax Museum. They didn't have any personality whatsoever. At the anthems, the two teams would stand on their respective blue lines and didn't move a muscle. There was no getting ready. It was just very stoic, and then it emerged into a very violent series as Canada fell behind markedly. In this case, all four teams, I say every play is pride of place. It's unbelievable what putting on your national sweater does for you. Even the Finns, as John Cooper said in his presser today, he said they were down 4-0 and late 4-1. They had every right to sort of lie down and say, okay, maybe I can get 3 days in Bermuda or two in Cabo, but they didn't do that. They fought tooth and nail to almost come back in the game. And you got great efforts from all four teams. And Elliot Friedman was making the point earlier with Kipper and Bourne that maybe had we do it again, we'd have had 25-man rosters. They were trying to make it nice and tidy. Canada in 72 brought 35. It was a debacle. But had they brought 25, that would have been... But the 23 who arrived and the one replacement, Harley, have been just tremendous. Everybody feels lucky that it's been a great showcase for hockey and for the game.
Well, the fact that Canada once tapped 35 players for a tournament might mean the answer to this is no, but I wonder, is there any, harken back any memories with this replacement drama, the Quinn Hughes aspect, Tage Thompson now being tapped to come in, Brett Pesce to do the same, to be there just in case, the injuries, the illness, all that's went into the last couple days, like, does it spark any memories for you from a previous sure. international tournament where there's been such drama?
I'll give you one that involves your dad. And the story is Marc Messier wasn't going to play in 1991 for Canada. He had played with Edmonton against Minnesota in a third round loss in 91. And he kind of had wind of the fact he was going to the New York Rangers, but the deal hadn't happened just yet. Nonetheless, he had been sort of hurt in the Minnesota series. He wanted to get ready for Broadway. So he had declined the request to play for Team Canada. And 48 hours before the tournament started, Wayne Gretzky phoned Mark in Edmonton and he said, Mark, I need you. You've got to come. And Mark said, I'd only rollerbladed twice all summer. I hadn't done anything. So I arrived and he played the first game and he said he woke up the next morning and everything hurt. His eyelashes, his ears, he was seriously damaged. But what's interesting is Chris Cuthbert had Wayne and Mark on the day before that game. So in the day that Mark arrives, he goes to Sports Weekend at CBC to be interviewed by Chris Cuthbert. And the two men sit down, and Chris said, I've never done this before or since. I took an Edmonton Oilers sweater to have those two guys, Wayne Gretzky and Marc Messier, sign it for me. Maybe to give to you, Justin, for all
I know. Where is it, Justin? And,
I know where it is.
Okay, and so what happened is Wayne signs it, Mark signs it, passes it back. And then Mark leans over and grabs the sweater, pulls it back, and dates it because he wanted it to be clear that he dated it, you know, Edmonton Oilers time, because right after the tournament, he went to New York.
It's a Messier jersey, not a Gretzky jersey, so maybe it's fitting that there's...
That's worth a little bit. That's your inheritance,
I guess, yeah,
Justin.
Probably shouldn't say that out loud too much, but, no one knows where we live.
That's true. Okay, I love the history that even though this is the first time tournament of the Four Nations face off, there's so much that we can look back on. Let's look back at Saturday night, though. Canada obviously dropping the first of two. How much does Cale Makar being in the lineup tomorrow night change the way you view Canada having maybe a different result?
Oh, gosh. And Charlie McAvoy out. Mm-hmm. It's a monumental difference. In that game, it's interesting. Zach Werenski only played 13 minutes, which is amazing. The guys who carried the freight were Brock Faber and Jacob Slavin. They were sensational. They were over 24 minutes for the United States. As much as we remember the McAvoy hits, those two, I thought, were the key to the deal for the Americans. But Makar's return is big. And, you know, the pace of these games, you guys, John Cooper said the first time he ever had an aha moment, an experience that was supernatural in hockey, was when he had, like, Todd McClellan was the head coach, but John Cooper was on the coaching staff, and he had Connor McDavid, Nathan MacKinnon, Colton Parayko, Austin Matthews, Jack Eichel, JT Miller, Dylan Larkin, Vincent Trocheck, and Connor Hellebuck. That's the 2016 Team North America. And he said, I remember the first time Team North America, these kids, went on the ice, and I was like, oh my God, what's become of our game? It's incredible. And he says, and imagine those guys are now 9 years into their careers in their prime. And he said, so when I sat behind the bench on Saturday, this past Saturday, it's the fastest hockey I've ever been a part of. And that's why Makar's return is extremely important. The comfort level he has with Taves, I mean, I can't say enough about Josh Morrissey and Colton Parayko. Morrissey is skating like he's compete levels off the charts, and his speed is amazing. I always knew Parayko could fly. And then the other thing to remember is Drew Doughty, you know, coming off the injury this year. Back in 2010, when Canada won the gold medal, he had assists on all three of the goals. Drew Doughty is a winner. So that should be a distinct advantage for Canada come tomorrow night.
We are chatting with Ron McLean, who will host another major, major sporting event tomorrow night with the Four Nations Championship between Canada and the United States. The game will be held in Boston. Of course, Montreal set an unbelievable stage for the first meeting between these two teams in this tournament. But how does Boston impact things? Like, how does the scene shift? What's different in Boston compared to Montreal? And what are you expecting tomorrow night from those scenes?
Well, the only thing that they had in Montreal, I don't know if they'll have them tomorrow night, were those lights on all the fans. Mm-hmm. So they were part of a great rock show. But I will say the Boston Bruins fans filled the building for both games 2 days ago. There was great Bruins energy. There's an amazing history with the Bruins in this particular final. Bill Guerin, the GM, is from there. Three of the four coaches are Boston University Terriers. And the other guy is John Tortorella, who's born in Boston. So there's a love for this team. I mean, the Tkachuks are connected right down through the lineup. And even if you go back again, you think of history. 1932 Olympics were in Lake Placid, not the famous 80 ones. But in 32, the Americans got ready for the tournament playing against the Boston Bruins. And Canada wasn't happy about it, but they did it. And the Bruins were part of that. And Art Ross, who was the architect of the Bruins teams, is from Montreal. He's originally Sudbury, but he was really a Montrealer. So there's it just feels, Justin, every bit as authentic. It's original six. It's very passionate. It'll be a great, great stage for the game tomorrow.
Yeah, we're looking at some of the X factors going into tomorrow night. And, you know, Jordan Binnington, I think he's been just as expected so far, but he won a game seven in that building a few years back. Like, look at some of the experience that Canada has, that one specifically for Jordan Binnington. Canada's got 20 Stanley Cups, a bunch of golden goals, Olympic gold medals. And, you know, United States maybe hasn't had as much of those winning moments. They've got three Stanley Cups on that roster compared to 20. Like, is it big moment experience tomorrow night that Canada has that might be the, like, intangible thing you can't really measure when it comes to winning?
I think it's huge. I remember Eilish going back to 2002 in Salt Lake City, sitting with Don Cherry and kind of going through all, I said that, you know, all these NHL awards, Canada's like, they're the better team on paper. It doesn't mean it's going to result in a victory. Brodeur was great. So was Richter. But I think that, you know, like if you watch Jack Hughes or Mitch Marner, guys who haven't maybe had that luxury, it's not easy, you know, to play in the pace, the frenzy of this series. It's just not easy. It's a great equalizer. And the one thing that can tell you who could maybe survive it is those NHL awards. And Crosby's looked great. Connor McDavid has scored the opening goal in two of the games, McKinnon. So I feel that also is an advantage. The one thing I will say is the Americans are, you know, they're steady. Little things like Jack Eichel, the last guy on practice for the Americans today was Eichel. He was out there, Brock Faber too, and they were the guys who were down in the net, fishing pucks out of the net and loading them into the pail to get the ice ready for the Canadian practice next. But Eichel's been emerging as a real leader here, and he's won a Stanley Cup, to your mm-hmm. point. So I think you look for those kinds of, and it's interesting, Gensel, he's playing against all his Tampa buddies. Mm-hmm. Canada's loaded with the Tampa guys, but Gensel so far has been the best Lightning. And in the Florida case, Matthew Tkachuk is fresh off a Stanley Cup, and you saw the impact he made Saturday night. So I think slight edge to Canada based on experience and awards, but the Americans are full value for where they're at right now, home ice advantage.
Yeah, those three cups for the U.S., they are, it's pretty clear who won them. Eichel's been awesome. Gensel's been terrific. In the tournament, and of course, Matthew Tkachuk has been one of the main stories of the tournament, given what we saw on Saturday or last Saturday night. We've seen a great tournament, too, from Sidney Crosby, who has a couple of those Stanley Cups as well. How do you sort of assess the stakes here for Crosby? Is this like a top five legacy moment potentially in his career? The two gold medals, the three Stanley Cups. This is one of the final chances likely for him to pad a Hall of Fame resume. Does that factor into the calculus at all tomorrow night?
For sure. He does, you know, he won 26 in a row. He doesn't want to have lost two in a row. So, yep. You know, Sid, I likened it to Ovechkin versus Crosby was the storyline going to Vancouver in 2010. And it very much was the two guys who, like Larry Bird and Magic Johnson, saved the National Basketball Association. Jordan comes in right behind those two, but it was Bird and Magic who really revitalized the National Basketball Association. And coming out of an entire year wiped away by a lockout, there's no question Crosby and Ovechkin were that for us in hockey. Now it's the passing of the torch. It's very much Mario at Salt Lake City was just such a calming presence there, and great to lead the guys. Even Joe Sakic was a little bit younger, but for sure Iginla learned, and lots of guys did. Sidney is passing the torch to MacKinnon and McDavid, and on God, it's a fantastic thing to see. You know, at core, this has been, for that reason more than any other, just a celebration of people who care so much for the sport. Crosby said that in 2010. He said, we're not here to compare how and who does what. We're here to showcase the passion we have for hockey. And, yeah, neat to see Sid's, and I hope, you know, that he can sustain, and I'm sure he will, that love for the next year when we get to Milan and Cortina.
We're wondering about, so this isn't the Stanley Cup, obviously it's never been awarded before. When whatever team wins tomorrow night, they'll get the trophy, they'll get gold medals, I assume as well. How do you think they go about the cup handoff? Because it's not, hey, this guy's never won the cup before, it's his chance. Is this a cup that's brand new? Is it, you know, if you're Sidney Crosby, you're giving it to Nathan MacKinnon because you guys are buddies, or are you giving it to Jordan Binnington because he won the game? Like, just curious what your thoughts are, Ron, on who might get the cup.
I should say that it's not a gold medal and it's not the Stanley Cup, but it feels like it is. Mm-hmm. It feels like it's been a, you know, stakes are high outside of the arena, you know, for whatever reason that's kind of manifest sometimes poorly, but what the hell, mm-hmm. you know, that you, everybody can understand why we feel the way we feel right now. And so I think if it was a 9-1 game, maybe they wouldn't pass the trophy around. You mentioned Binnington's scene of his prime here in 2019. When he received the cup, he then gave it, or Colton Parayko gave it to him. So the two guys who, you know, have a great memory of that building, I think they'll pass it around. I think, you know, it's we're in the U.S. If it's Canada, maybe they'll just do the Kachuk and rush to the dressing room with it. But I think they've earned the right to make it a special little scene and share some of the moments.
Looking forward to it. Yeah. Last one for me, Ron. The wow moment I think that everyone shared was Saturday night, 9 seconds. Has there been a wow moment that not everyone has been privy to that you've experienced over the last 10 days?
No, I tried to compare it to other sports, Justin. Devin Hester returned a Super Bowl kick in 2007. Opening kickoff, he returned it for a touchdown, kind of blew the roof off of a building. And Chris Taylor of the Los Angeles Dodgers hit a home run on the first pitch of the World Series in L.A. in 2017. And Mike Tyson's starts were always electric. Formula One are always electric. When I got to Kevin Bieksa, naturally, he comes up with Happy Gilmore, Adam Sandler driving it 400 yards onto the green. Yeah. But I've never seen anything like it. I've never, you know, my most emotional moment ever broadcasting was when Marianne Limpert won a silver medal in the 400 IM in Atlanta. Mm-hmm. That being on the pool deck and seeing an only child from Fredericton. I'm a Maritimer by mom and dad's, you know, connection to Cape Breton, and I'm an only child. And she was not expected to medal, and she put on the swim of a lifetime. And I was in tears and kind of vibrating on the pool deck. I was supposed to be a professional, but I was like really gone fan. And I was gone fan like we all were Saturday night. I can't think of a comparable other than that.
Did you hear my mixtape I made, the song for Elliot and Kyle?
No.
Oh, Ron, I will send it to you. All right. It'll get you fired up for tomorrow night. It's really
playing
good
in the Canadian dressing room.
They might play it in the Canadian dressing room. So we'll make sure we send that to you. Let me know how you like it, Ron.
Good for you. Yeah.
We'll let you go, though. Enjoy tonight. A nice dinner I had for you guys. Well deserved. And tomorrow night will be one to remember. We appreciate your time, Ron.
Thanks, Ailish. Thanks, Justin.
That's Ron McLean, Hockey Night in Canada. And tomorrow is the big night. We got Canada-USA, I believe Sportsnet will be on the air at 7. So we'll have a full pregame show for an hour long. We'll also be on the air until 8 here on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, getting you set for Puck Drop.
Yeah, looking forward to it. What's your emotion like? Are you a little nervous yet?
Yeah, I'm nervous.
I think tomorrow I'll feel a little nervous.
Yeah.
I've been trying to like stash it aside for a couple of days because there's been such a large break here.
Yeah.
But there's been so much drama over the three days.
This has not been a quiet break.
No.
Eh?
And the latest today with Tage Thompson and Brett Pesce going to Boston in case of injury or illness tomorrow. And I think that's probably a wise thing for the United States, given that Brady Tkachuk did not practice today. Matthew Tkachuk, I think, was on and off at a certain point. And there's obviously worry about Austin Matthews. They're without Charlie McAvoy. And the Bruins, apparently, according to Elliot Friedman, are not happy with the American staff over the treatment of Charlie McAvoy. So much has went into this. And I didn't even mention Quinn Hughes, who was will he or won't he for
the
better part of 48 hours, whether or not he was going to come over. And while that all that's happening, the Canadian team is maybe peaking, maybe reaching its best version of itself with Cale Makar healthy now, I imagine, or at least better than he was a couple days ago. And a team that just feels like, yeah, they don't have to make any roster decisions. They don't have to worry about someone attending practice. They just held a professional, upbeat, high-tempo skate today that left onlookers wowed by it. So I think that portends good things potentially for Canada, but the USA will probably be running on adrenaline. That might be enough tomorrow.
Yeah, and they've got the arena, you know, whether it's going to be 50-50, 70-30. Like, I think we'll find out. I mean, Montreal was amazing, and you saw the anthems and you saw everything that happened there. I cannot imagine that tomorrow night won't have
a little bit of a good Canadian contingent.
I hope so.
Because, like, I don't know if it was an issue in Boston, but there was, like, a little ticket thing for a while, and then everyone saw what happened. They're like, oh, can we get these tickets? So it might be dominated by third party, and therefore Canadians understanding the importance of it might be able to get down there. I'm not really sure how it's going to be, but I think Canada will have some support in the building.
Yeah, tickets are expensive.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hopefully there's no snowstorms. Everybody gets there in time. But, yeah, we're looking forward to it. Tomorrow we'll do a full pregame, getting you set for puck drop. Do you want to do best bets and take a break and talk to Brian Gionta? Okay. We do have something else on the network tonight because I know you are all waiting anxiously to watch Canada-USA. Well, we've got Charlotte Hornets and the Lakers tonight at 10 p.m. on Sportsnet, Sportsnet 1. And I know usually that's not like
What's the connection between Charlotte and L.A. right now?
Ooh, the rescinded trade. So we've got the hot game on the network tonight. Remember Mark Williams getting traded to the Lakers, and then he got rescinded because Dalton Connect or somebody failed some medical. We don't know.
Mark Williams apparently did, but he's pretty confident that he didn't. So
tonight they're finally facing off for the first time, and it's like the first game back from the All-Star break for these guys. It's perfect revenge angle. So I've got a couple Mark Williams props for you. A double-double at just plus 100, but also to get 20-plus points is plus 265. There's some spicy quotes coming out ahead of tonight's matchup. He's like, I didn't fail my physical. That didn't cross my mind. I've been back. I've been ready to go. So, you know, then he obviously anticipating tonight's game goes, can't write this any other way, right? NBA script. It is what it is. So he's fired up for tonight. So I'm looking for a little Mark Williams revenge angle tonight.
There you go. And they tried to get Mark Williams for a reason because they don't have anyone like Mark Williams.
So he can just go.
Mark Williams might be able to do Mark Williams
tonight.
Things if that makes
so double sense. Double or 20 plus points, and you could ladder it.
The other part of that trade, of course, was Dalton Connect, at least going over to Charlotte initially, and he will play for the Lakers tonight. I like Dalton Connect to hit 2+3s at minus 105 on Botano. He had 11 attempts in his last two games. He's been taking more shots since the trade was rescinded. After the Lakers tried to get rid of him, they started using him more, it seems. So Connect, maybe he gets four attempts, and if he does, I think he knocks down two of them. So Connect over 1.5 threes as a revenge angle of sorts as well.
I think I felt the worst for Dalton Connect after being traded away to come back to your team when they clearly wanted Mark Williams. Like, they needed Mark Williams. So I think Mark Williams has the edge on the prove it tonight. That's my thought.
Okay, that's fair.
We'll see. Maybe they can both hit. All of it can hit.
They're all going to hit.
Yeah, I think so. I'm actually excited to watch this game.
I'm actually very confident with these picks.
Yeah, I think these are great picks. No promises, but feeling good about it. Okay, we'll take a quick break. We're going to chat with Brian Gionta in about 10 minutes. Is 2003 Stanley Cup champ, former Team USA Olympian two times over, and was a captain of the Habs as well. Lots of years wearing that U.S. sweater. Good opportunity to ask him what it means and what this tournament's been like for him. And then we'll wrap up and send you on your way. We'll be right back on the Fan Pregame.
Covering the Blue Jays from an analytical perspective. Jays Talk Plus with Blake Murphy. Be sure to subscribe and download Jays Talk on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back on the Fan Pregame, Sportsnet and Sportsnet 590. The Fan, slowly approaching the big game tomorrow night. Canada-USA, it's going to be an 8 p.m. puck drop here on Sportsnet, 7 p.m. pregame show across the network. We'll be on till 8 on the radio to get you set for the game. Okay, so we're going to wrap up some Vlad thoughts.
We can do that.
You don't want to?
I mean, it's a sad storyline. I don't necessarily love talking about the situation, but it's our job. It's our duty.
Well, just because Jeff Passan had some good thoughts today on Blair Barker.
Yeah, he did. Important context, I think.
Passan admitted
that he didn't know what the number was.
Yeah.
In terms of what Vlad was offered, but did say, quote, "I believe Vladimir Guerrero Jr. turned down a lot of money, like a lot of money." So
you wouldn't say that if it's something that's in the 400, this sounds crazy to say, like 400 million? Like, you'd be saying that if it was like 500, 600.
Yeah, I think it's a bit of a fool's errand guessing. No. I do. I do think, though, based on, you know, reading tea leaves, the disappointment that we saw from Mark and Ross is that they thought they brought something pretty special to the table.
And they said they went past their limits.
Limits. And I think it was surprising to them, surprising to the organization, that it was rebuffed in the way it was.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Rescinded.
And it wasn't even close, right? Which is a little strange, right? Because we've heard reports that Vladdy wanted something and they knew and, you know, so on and so forth. But, you know, Passan did also say, quote, "I do think Juan Soto changed the dynamic." And I think that's that's really like the key aspect of all this, is that they let more information affect all this, affect their relationship in the end, because there was, as we talked about, so many times, pivot points, checkpoints along the way where they could have stepped in and be like, okay, Vlad, let's firm up this partnership forever. And they waited till the very last minute, after seismic deals were signed, after other players who are probably in the same ballpark as Vladdy signed mega deals as well, after even Alex Bregman got $40 million a year. Could you possibly sign him for less than 40? Even if it was 15, probably not. And you can do the addition or multiplication required on that. I just think that's the general failure here, is that they decided to wait when waiting just puts so much more information in Vladdy's head, and the opportunity for him to be like, yeah, $500 million is probably out there for me and I'm going to go get it eventually.
That's the piece of information I need before I fully lean into one feeling. You know, like, I'm frustrated. I wish that he was going to be a Blue Jay. I feel some, like, frustration towards the front office. I feel some frustration towards just the way that this has fallen apart. But there is that little bit of information about, okay, well, he was asking for $700 million that would make me feel a little bit better towards the decision-making process that went on with Mark and Ross and co, right? But if he was asking for $500 million and we're still so far apart, like not even close, using the air quotes, then I can lean into that feeling. You know what I mean? But I was surprised, like, you know, Passan and all the insiders, like, someone's going to get to the bottom of this amount of money. It's going
to
come out.
It would definitely help to know. I think it would
come out.
Definitely help management if it's a competitive offer, or what we think would be a competitive offer. If Guerrero's asks are just such that it's just completely outlandish.
Like astronomical.
If you're comparing yourself directly to Juan Soto, who, again, got to go to market and got a team like the Mets, who, not desperate, but had incentive that no other team really had in terms of that amount of money. Like, yeah, the Blue Jays were involved, but they weren't going, what was it, $765 million, something like that? Like, if it's close to that, of course you have to have eventually some stop signs in place. And that's just the reality of working for a company, running a business, whatever you want to put on it, whatever spin. Like, there are limitations to everything. And if Vladdy is not picking up on reasonable limitations, then he priced himself out. And again, if it's $400 million and something reasonable and something that would be considered market value or the going rate or putting him in a position where he's not necessarily maybe the highest paid at his position, but not the highest paid player in Major League Baseball or even the highest beyond Shohei or Soto, then I'm not really sure what, you know, the answer to the question is or who would be wrong or how to even feel about it. But there's a distinct possibility that Vladdy just priced himself out. And that's something that would be a little bit more easy to grasp and understand if we actually knew.
Yeah, I feel you. And I don't think we won't find out. How about that? Might take some time, but those insiders, they get to the bottom of everything. All right, to wrap up our show this evening, let's bring on Brian Gionta, Stanley Cup champ, former USA Olympian. Brian, we appreciate you coming on. I mean, you're kind of enemy territory around here, but we'll accept it. How's it going?
Good, you? Yeah. I mean, between US and Montreal, I don't think I'm doing too well.
Yeah, well, you were way down our list of people to invite, so we're really glad you could make it on such short notice. But in all seriousness, you know, it's really exciting kind of to hear the other side of it. We are obviously Canadian and I'll selfishly say cheering for Canada, but it's great to get the perspective of, like, what it's like seeing this American team with so much feistiness, so much pride. Like, it's been, you know, half of the story here is just how much they've come and burst on the scene. You know, someone that's got to wear the United States sweater and represent your country, like, what has this brought back for you? Probably memories, some pride, some excitement seeing it finally come back to a little best on best here.
Yeah, it was always special. I mean, whether it was World Juniors back in the day, World Championships, and the Olympics a couple times, it was always a special moment being able to represent your country. And I think you bring that passion, that pride every shift you're out there. And I think you're seeing it with this U.S. team is they had something to prove and they were coming out early. Especially in that first Canada game, right? I thought that their intensity ramped up from their first game. So they brought the intensity there. It will be interesting to see how they can kind of respond. I don't want to say a letdown of a game three, but not much on the line. So you let your foot off the gas a little bit. Hopefully they can kind of ramp it back up for the Thursday night game. And, you know, I think regardless, hockey's winning. It's been a great mini series here, something that's been brought back by the NHL, and I think everyone's buying into it.
You're a great person to ask about the trajectory of USA Hockey, Brian, because you had 20 years between wearers, I guess, of the U.S. sweater. Is this team like the product of, you know, the National Development Program? Is this like sort of the crown jewel moment in terms of, hey, this is what we've been looking or working towards and building sort of behind the glass curtain or whatever you want to call it, like, because you haven't had that opportunity to showcase this in a while in a true best on best. And you look at the rosters in 2014 and it wasn't like it is now. There's been huge growth in the last 10 years. Is this sort of like what comes to mind when assessing how this arrived on the scene in this perfect moment in time?
Well, I think you go in waves, right? I mean, I think if I'm thinking back to my generation, we were always looking up to the Doug Waits, the Mike Madonos, the Keith Kachuks, and I had a chance to play with them. So I overlap with the Chelioses, the Kachuks, the Hatchers, like that whole generation of U.S. players. I was fortunate enough to be at the tail end of theirs. And, you know, kind of me and Gomez and those guys, we kind of bridged the gap until the Parisis and those guys came along. So I think this generation of USA Hockey player, it's much more removed in that ADM model, the development model, whether it's the program out in Michigan. I think you're reaping the benefits of that. And I think you're seeing multiple generations that have come up through that really peak now on the international stage and come together as one unit. I think in the past, if you look back in the 2006 Olympics that I participated in, we had that old guard. We had the Madonos, the Chelioses, like I said, the Waits. And then the Parisis came along in the 2010s, the 2014s. And I think this is the first time that you've really benefited from that that national program that the U.S. has developed. It missed my generation. We were never a part of it. It came into play after, you know, the likes of myself and Gomez came through. So now, you know, that first generation, second, third, fourth generation of these players are starting to come through. And so you're stacking that talent on one team now.
I'm glad you mentioned playing with Keith Tkachuk because, I mean, his two sons are basically taken over, at least from our perspective of, like, what these American stars are going to be. How much has that become the story south of the border? How much are kids looking up to both Matthew and his brother, just, like, the way that they, like, Brady and him are just, they're fun, they're, like, kind of different, and they play with a lot of pride, and they love each other, but now they're fighting, dropping gloves. Like, it's just, it's a part of Keith in them, in both of them. I just wonder how much it started to spread across the country, and, like, are they the face of American hockey?
Well, I think, you know, that the whole generation is so skilled, right? And I think they're a little bit of a mix of that both. They bring that skill level, but they also bring the grit that was back in the day. And so I think they've melded those two together. And certainly Walt, Keith, you know, has a huge part to that. The way he played, the way he brought it, the skill level he had. So it certainly rubs off from him to his kids. And it's just fun to see that it's still a part of the game. And, you know, there's still a place for that type of play. And within reason and within skill set, I love seeing them melded together.
Yeah, you're doing coaching, right?
Yeah, I coach a junior A in the North American Hockey League. My son plays there in Rochester, Junior Amherst, and so I help coach there. And it's been fun to kind of impart and, you know, basically see some of these games with these kids that have never really seen it. I mean, my son's 19. Mm-hmm. He was a part of, you know, a big part of my career he was able to see, but this is a real, true best-on-best that they haven't seen in a long time.
So what are those kids, like, when I was a kid, the Tkachuk thing would have sent me, like, over the moon. Like, I would have thought that was the greatest thing that's ever happened in my entire life. But, you know, I won't pretend to know what 16, 17-year-old kids are into these days. But I hear, like, you know, Connor Bedard is the biggest thing. And Jack Hughes would be a huge thing. And Austin Matthews, I guess, as well. Like, are kids, like, juiced up about what the Tkachuks did? Or is it a different world in that way?
No, I think they are. I think there's still that in hockey, and I still think there's a part that every hockey player loves about that. You know, it's certainly a different generation, whether it's Instagram or any of these, you know, short video clips. They watch the highlights, and they watch the highlights of all these skilled players, whether it's a Matthews or McDavid, and you said Hughes and others, Bedard. They're so skilled that they see these little clips, but it's fun for them to sit down and watch a full game and watch the passion of a full game and see, you know, how it's the ins and outs of it and the physicality of it and what that does to change the outcome of games.
I'm so super curious to hear your perspective on Austin Matthews because he's obviously the captain here in Toronto. He's captain of the United States team. He's from a different market. He's not a Michigan guy. He's not a Boston kid. So I wonder where he ranks in terms of U.S., you know, hockey faces that kids are looking up to these days. He plays in Canada. He hasn't been able to represent his country at the world stage so often that, you know, you circle him in your USA jersey and you think that's who I want to be. Like, has he broken through past North, like from up here, from Toronto, from Canada to become a guy that, you know, kids are looking up to south of the border?
Well, I think they're definitely looking up to him. There's no doubt. I mean, he's one of the tops in the league. And I think a lot of young kids look up to him, whether they, you know, where they're from, whatever country they're from. Mm-hmm. I do think that there needs to be a few more of these best on best where he's in those moments that really solidifies himself in that USA jersey rather than in the NHL. And I think there's a distinction to be made there. And I don't think that that's crossed that yet for guys like that. And I think that's what I think is so exciting about this tournament is it's starting to get these guys on the map within their country, representing their country on a huge stage and just with the passion that they bring. So I think that's been a huge takeaway of the last week or so.
We're talking to Stanley Cup champion and two-time U.S. Olympian Brian Gionta. What emotions did it elicit when you played Canada internationally?
It was huge. It was, you know, me as an undersized guy, I always had something to prove. It was a different generation of players and to try to break into the league, to try to make a name for myself. So I was, you know, in the generation of playing against Thornton and Marlowe and those guys in international play, whether it's the 16s or the 18s and or World Juniors, your Luongo. So that was my platform to prove myself against those greats. And so I took every moment against Team Canada. I remember World Juniors in Winnipeg that we had a you know, New Year's Eve game against Canada. And you know, we won it. That was huge. That was a highlight of our tournament back in the day in the World Junior. So it was certainly a huge rivalry, and it meant a lot to both sides.
You also captained the Montreal Canadiens, and that's an important city, and it's an important hockey city. It's an important rink, and we kind of saw the pinnacle. It feels like, at least to me, on Saturday night, like USA and Canada in Montreal. You just mentioned Winnipeg. Like, again, Winnipeg, a great hockey city, but is that the pinnacle of hockey, USA and Canada in Montreal?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it gets much better than that. I think that matchup on Saturday night in Montreal, Canada, U.S., it's you can't script it any better. And I think, obviously, with all the other stuff, you know, political stuff going on, it just adds to the fuel. But I think regardless, it was going to be an atmosphere that everyone was going to embrace and love. And there's not a better spot to have it. I love Montreal. I love the fans. They were great to me. I love the media. There's no better spot to see that play out.
Yeah, you also played for the Bruins, so you're getting like, this is like the Brian Gionta Bowl. You know, you were in both rinks, you played for USA, so I guess they nailed it with the locations, like Boston and Montreal, close enough for both, you know, you could travel to both. I'm both pretty historic hockey cities, so I'm seeing why Toronto maybe wasn't picked, you know? It's like, those are some good barns. Let's ask you about the game tomorrow night, of course. Like, you know, there's going to be a different lineup a little bit, I hope that the Americans are healthy. Like, I want to see the best on best and not any excuses maybe when Canada wins. Where do you think that Canada might have an advantage when you look at this roster? Because I think you're better in goaltending. I think maybe the forwards have different skill sets. And you could say the same for the defensemen. Like, where are you worried most about when you look at this Canada roster?
Well, obviously they're explosive. And so in a one game take all type of setup, a lot of it is really making sure that their skill doesn't take over. And I think for sure their forwards are the world class, whether it's a Crosby or McDavid, McKinnon, like they can take over a game at any moment. So it's keeping that in check is going to be what U.S., how they, their chances of victory, how they get to a victory. And I think they did a good job of that on Saturday. And I think they got to replicate that. And I do agree, like their forward set, when you take it skill level, point-wise, whatever you want to say, it probably outmatches the U.S., but they also have to go and win a game. And I think, you know, U.S. had their game plan going into Saturday. They're going to play hard. They're going to make sure that they clogged the middle of the ice and made sure that their skill didn't hurt them in one-off type of setups. And I think they have to do the same Thursday, you know. It's hard to pick apart any of these rosters. Let's be honest. Like, they're world-class players that are at the top of their game. So I don't think you can really say that a goaltending is better on one side, D-Cor is better on one side, and four group is better on one side. They're built different, but I don't know if you can say one is better than the other.
I think one thing I picked up on this in this tournament, Brian, is that the players who have won already are comfortable and they are standing out. Even the United States only has three guys who have won a Stanley Cup: Gensel, Matthew Tkachuk, and Jack Eichel. And I would make the argument that maybe they've been the best three players for the United States. There's lots of cup winners on Canada, and there's guys who aren't, and those guys seem to be struggling just a little bit. It feels like experience and experience at the highest level of these games, Stanley Cup final type games, are more comfortable. You won the Stanley Cup in 2003. How did that kind of set the tone for the rest of your career? Did it make things easier for the rest of your career? Did it make you comfortable in situations others weren't because you had won?
Yeah, I think it's a funny thing, because there's plenty of times that, you know, you're in moments and it just doesn't work out for you. But it wasn't because you weren't comfortable. But I do think there is a comfort level in being in those moments, learning from those moments, understanding the pressures of those moments. And it comes down to literally every shift you're out there, any little play can change the outcome of a game. And so that's a heavy burden to carry when you're really trying to play your game and trying to get to your style of play. Whether you turn it over or a bad change or something happens, it can change the course of the game, especially in a one-game setting. So these guys that have been a part of it and been a part of that pressure-packed situation, of course they're going to feel more comfortable than someone else.
We didn't talk too much about the Olympics, but I'm curious, when you look at all the things you've accomplished and all the places and like levels of opportunity you've had, we're trying to see, okay, if they're going to have a World Cup of hockey every couple of years and going to have all these international opportunities, will anything ever compare to being at the Olympics, to play for your country at that stage, to like go for an Olympic medal? Like, can we get to a point where they're similar, or is Olympics just the, like the thing that you dream about?
It's hard because the Olympics are so wide reaching, whether it's different sports and everybody tunes into it, not just hockey fans. And so it's a whole different animal than anything else. So I think it will be hard to replicate. They're all different. World Juniors, World Championships, Olympics, World Cups, Four Nations. The meaning behind it, represent your country, will never change. The Olympics is just a little different in the sense that everybody tunes in. You watch it as a young kid. You watch the summer, winter Olympics. Everyone's tuned in for those few weeks it's going on. Whether you're a huge fan or not, you're watching the games.
Yeah, I'm like falling in love with like skeleton and luge. Yeah, and exactly. Like, oh my, come on, how did you not like luge faster? Like it's the best. I love the Olympics. Are you, hopefully you don't have to coach tomorrow night. You get to watch the game.
No, tomorrow night I have off, so we have a Friday, Saturday set, so we'll be tuning into the game.
Okay, well, I hope it goes poorly. I'm just kidding. I hope it goes well. Maybe in overtime and everybody's happy. Everyone has fun.
Yeah, exactly.
We do appreciate coming on. This was great, and I'd love to catch up down the road. Thanks so much.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me on, and it'll be a win for hockey no matter which way it ends up.
That's a good answer. All right.
Said it better than us.
Yeah, that was like a Canadian answer in a sense, you know?
Yeah.
I was Brian Gionta, Stanley Cup champ, represented USA at the Olympics, Habs captain. Like he's been at all of the things.
Yeah, cool final chapter to his career. Played in the Olympics in 2006, then NHLers didn't go to the Olympics in 2018, and he was kind of without a team and figuring out what the last step was, decided to go to the Olympics as a non-NHL player and then signed with the Boston Bruins after participating in the Olympics. So a very unique final season of professional hockey for Brian Gionta, who had a great career.
Yeah, and a Boston College guy. So he would be very much at home at this tournament in the Boston area. Okay, so we got a couple minutes. We mentioned it with Ron. This is the first time this trophy's ever been awarded. They're also getting gold medals, so I don't know how it's going to play out tomorrow. So you win, you jump on the goalie, you celebrate.
Do you get a silver medal tomorrow?
I don't know. I think I just saw gold medals and a trophy.
Okay.
Let's say there's silver medals, too. Doesn't matter. My thought process is, and one of the best things in sport when the Stanley Cup is handed off is who is getting the cup, because we can predict those things. We always like to try to find a storyline behind it. So tomorrow,
which old dude is getting it?
Yeah, who's been, you know, waiting for a cup for 30 years and is finally getting it? Yeah. Tomorrow, what other team wins? Nobody's ever won this trophy before, so it's not like you've waited 100 years to win the Four Nations Faceoff. Yes. So if you're Sidney Crosby or you're Auston Matthews, how are you going about giving this trophy to somebody? Is it also going to be paraded around, or are they going to do the whoa?
That's what I think. I think there's only one Stanley Cup. And that's the sort of answer. But you only do that, the pass around thing. Everyone gets a moment, a lap if you want it. I think you only do that with one trophy. I almost think it would be somewhat disrespectful.
But the hatred between these two teams, they're going to want to parade it around. Like, I just don't think they're going to be like, thanks so much, Gary. Like, is Gary handing it out?
Maybe they're just firing beers into it as fast as possible. Yeah. I just don't think they're going to do the one thing. One guy at a time gets to have a little moment with it, because that would be acting like it's the Stanley Cup when it's clearly not the Stanley Cup.
Aren't there other trophies, like, you know, when they win?
Yeah, when you win anything you win, you get a trophy.
Yeah.
And teams do like a little huddle thing and they throw it up together and they mob around it, but they don't go one at a time with it.
I think that they should go one at a time for it so we can predict who's going to get it. But because you
So who do you think's getting it first then, with Canada?
Okay, so if it's Canada that wins, it's Sidney Crosby as the captain.
So he gets it. And that makes sense. He would be the old guy.
And
sorry,
he
said.
So I'm like, Sidney Crosby is going to beeline for his best friend, Nathan MacKinnon. I just can't think of any other way. The Cole Harbour guys, like, they train together. They're like,
Brad Marchand, you know, though, Nova Scotia and
I
older.
I know. And he's the Boston guy.
Yeah.
But are you thinking, like, you know, Brad Marchand, who hasn't won a cup? Who wants this?
I think because MacKinnon and Crosby are just attached at the hip, apparently.
He'll probably be right beside
him. It's just like, oh, hey, here. Here's the trophy.
Yeah, I want to go through this tomorrow. I want to think about a reason for everybody.
Okay, what about the States, then?
But that's the thing. I don't know who. Like, Auston Matthews, does he have any relationships with these guys? Like, he's probably just going to be like,
best bud on the team? I don't know that answer.
That's what I'm thinking. Did you give it to Connor Hellebuck because he won the thing for you?
I think the Tkachuk brothers just
they'll
like,
be on it. They'll be ripping both handles apart.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, we'll maybe think about it tomorrow. But we got lots to go through tomorrow, obviously. We'll have a full 2-hour show for you. So that was Fan Pregame brought to you by Betano. The game starts now. We'll see you tomorrow, Championship Thursday.